Stay tuned for a very special episode of The Tony Perkins Show featuring Gary Stein.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment. It's The Tony Perkins Show featuring Gary Stein. No, they're not related. They're just good friends. It's Tony and Gary.
I was off key. I'm so off key. I'm always off key. Wow, I like that. Wow, Al Jarreau's with us today. you know what I admire about Dude Walker?
What? Many things.
First of all, he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
But notice how he basically does it the same every week.
It is amazing. And we watch him in that booth. He's not in the actual studio with us. He's in a booth. He's down the hall a little bit, about 10 feet away.
Right.
And it almost sounds like a recording.
He nails it, doesn't he?
Every
he nails
week,
it.
Every
and, you
week.
Know, I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but you know, I don't edit myself anyway. A couple of weeks ago, he admitted that he was a little constipated.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought that would affect his performance.
Not at all.
It came like clockwork. And Rob, if you time it,
yes.
I bet his intro is about the same time every week.
I'll have to look into that. I mean, that's incredible. That's why he makes the big bucks.
Yes.
That's why he's dude.
He's the
right?
consummate professional. And now look at him. He's just walking away. He hears us, but he's just walking away.
Oh, he's taking the money.
I hear it all the time.
He's going.
I hear it all the time. But here's the great thing. He's such a pro. He does his thing, comes in, does it. Fantastic every time. Right now he's going to go probably have lunch,
yeah.
And then he'll be back. I don't know how he does this. He comes back just in time for us to wrap the show,
yes.
And say his last little piece.
Well, that doesn't surprise me nearly as much as, you know, we call these things stings,
mm-hmm.
in between segments.
That's right.
How
I forgot
does he
about
know?
Those.
How does he know that we're wrapping a segment?
I don't
and he
know.
But you know, he's panting,
yeah.
And he runs in the room.
That's right.
And he never sounds like he's out of
he
breath.
He does not sound like.
Wait, wait, hold. I think he's poking his head in right now.
What's he doing?
Dude?
It's Tony and Gary, the Tony Perkins Show.
Now you're just just showing off.
Stop, dude.
Dude.
Yeah. And you know what?
There he goes again.
If you're going to get a bagel, bring some back for us.
Oh, no, wait. There's toilet paper on his shoe. He is good.
He is. Let's give it up for Dude Walker.
Dude Walker. What a voice.
Makes himself available.
What a voice.
Every weekend for us.
He's a nut.
Yeah.
He's crazy. Hello, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Tony and Gary Show. I'm Tony.
I'm Gary.
And we have a fun-filled broadcast for you today. Well, it's not a broadcast, but a fun-filled program for you today.
Is it a broadcast? Why not?
I guess it's not, technically speaking. I don't know. Rob, what do you think?
You could call it a podcast, but I think since Tony's the big headliner, we could call it a procast because he's a pro.
Well, maybe we could call it a broadcast if we get a broad in here.
All of a sudden, I'm working with the Rat Pack.
Hey, you know, the guy over here thinks he's a pro. What am I, chopped liver?
Think you're a pro, hey? Anyway, welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. We've got a chock full one for you today. Before we do that, I want to thank you for all of your wonderful comments from last week's show. And we also want to encourage you to tell your friends, because you're already doing this, tell your friends to check out the Tony Perkins Show on iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast provider is.
Right.
Check out the show and subscribe to it. That's what gets the numbers up. We appreciate it, and we love that so many of you are doing it. That's fantastic.
Now, Rob, don't you usually say that it's best for them to subscribe through iTunes?
Yeah, it doesn't matter where you listen, but go on ahead, subscribe on iTunes, give us a 5-star review.
It helps
us
a lot.
Thank
you,
Gary. Thank you, Gary and Rob.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
I said, and I think this is the second or third time you've corrected me.
Well, but you know,
listen where you want.
As much as, you know, we talk about that I have issues,
mm-hmm.
I'm just here to help. I really am.
And you're so helpful.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. If anybody could see the look on your face right now, you would know that he didn't mean it at all.
Subscribe on iTunes. Yes, that's what we want. We do have a guest on today's show, a man that I met many, many, many years ago. Met him in passing.
Abe Lincoln?
Not Abe Lincoln, no. We'll have him on a future show.
We should. You know, he's a hero.
You know what we should do?
Quite the document.
You know what we should do
sometime?
What
do you think? What should we do, Tony?
We should do a seance on the show and
really?
Have one of those
You don't think we're putting people to sleep now?
No, no, no. A seance where you get a spiritualist who reaches out to people who have passed over.
Oh, okay.
And then she can talk to us. Usually it's a woman
for
some reason.
Yeah.
He or she.
Yeah.
And they can, like, we can say, we want to talk to Abe Lincoln, and she can channel him, and we could do that.
I think that is a tremendous idea.
Yeah. That would be pretty fun.
I would love that.
Although, you know what? Does it work like if Abe Lincoln is in heaven, we assume, and he's like having lunch or something, is he just paged all of a sudden? Abe Lincoln
to the portal.
Yeah,
Abe to the portal.
And he's like, again, why do so many people want to talk to me? I'm dead.
You know what? Can I? do you think that now that he's in heaven, and I do think he's in heaven, I think he was a good president.
Me too.
Do you think that horrible boil thing on his face is gone? What? No, when you go to...
No,
when,
you're
do,
restored.
Do you lose your imperfections?
You're restored to your perfect condition.
Oh, but what year is that?
Well, I mean...
Were you perfect at 5?
Well, yeah.
Or were you perfect at, you know...
What if he's like 7 years old?
Wearing a top hat.
Is it pre-beard or post-beard?
Yeah, I liked him with the beard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
He was much more handsome with
first
the beard.
First president with a beard.
Was he really?
He was.
Was he the first and last?
I don't think so.
Have we had a president with a beard?
He had Grant. He's on the 50.
Ah, yes, yes.
But Tony doesn't really look at the 50s all that much. He's strictly a $100 bill kind of guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's way beyond. Is there a billion-dollar bill, Tony?
I don't have one.
Okay, all right.
It has Chester Ray Arthur on it. No beard, but a hell of a mustache.
You know your presidents and their facial hair.
I do. I'm
if really there's a billion-dollar bill, Richard Pryor's on it.
Anyway, Abraham Lincoln is not on the show today. We are going to be joined by a comedian and hypnotist, Flip Orley.
Oh, Flip Wilson's on the show?
No, not Flip. Well, listen, I told Gary, Flip is going to be on the show, so print up some material. And he hands it to me today. It's Flip Wilson's biography.
I figured, what's the difference? I looked at, you know what I did? I looked at the two biographies, right. And I just picked the one that I thought was better.
Well, no, Flip has passed on. We could seance him in, too.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be Flip Wilson and Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
And they could have a dialogue.
And they could do a movie trivia quiz.
That's right. Anyway, Flip Orley is, unless he's leaving right now because he's hearing all this, Flip Orley is on the show today, appearing at the DC Improv this weekend, the weekend that we're recording this, and he's great. He's amazing. It's not a joke. He really does hypnotize people on stage.
Is he going to hypnotize you?
I don't know. Maybe we could ask. I will say, is this hypnotism music?
Yes.
Oh, this is good.
Or something from Harry Potter.
It does have a Harry Potter. Yeah. Potter. Yeah, you're right. This is a is that a theremin?
I think it is.
A theremin?
A theremin.
You mean like theraflu?
No, no, no. It's an odd. It's an odd instrument. How would you describe it, music master?
I've never seen one in person, only in pictures. But it's some kind of box or tube, and you wave your fingers over it.
Yeah.
And you're not even touching it, and whatever your fingers do, it makes noise.
Really?
Yeah, it changes the pitch.
There aren't strings on it? I thought there were strings on it.
I don't know. I didn't get a lot of theremin time.
It's not like a harmonica, you know? It's not at all like a harmonica. We know that.
It's good.
Watch him take this up.
You got any other? Oh, yeah. I'm not. I won't. I have it with me.
You do?
I have it with
me. Your theremin? All right.
No, my harmonica. My harmonica. Yeah. You have any other hypnotist music in case that's too spooky for him?
Yeah. Let's see here what
I
can do.
I'm not sure he'll appreciate this music or not. He's not very hokey. Oh, let's see. I want you to relax. Relax your...
Where are we going?
I don't know.
This is Somewhere in Time with Christopher Reeve. And... What? It is, isn't it? It's like very sappy. I'm starting to cry.
Is there another theremin in this?
I think so.
What is that bizarre? Yeah.
That's the theremin. I'm really into the theremin this week.
Yeah,
it's just
obviously.
Lucky we happen to have a hypnotist on the show.
Sounds like very corny organ playing.
Yeah. Maybe this will be the seance music.
Is somebody playing a saw?
It does have that quality.
Yeah,
all right, take that.
All right, enough Theraflu.
No,
it's not
no
working
music.
At all.
No
can
music.
I tell you something?
Yes.
You're the most generous person I've ever met in my life. No, you really are. So I got you a little gift.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I did. Okay. I got you a little present. And
now, you've been giving me gifts. You gave me a phone a couple of weeks ago.
I did. This is different.
Okay.
This isn't the same kind of gift, but here, catch. Are you good at catching?
I'm good.
Here you go.
Sure.
Here you go. All this right. is for you.
Can I open this?
Oh, please open it.
Okay.
It's a gift.
I don't know what this is.
No, you don't.
Looks
you don't.
Like
You'll be. And you know what? I think you're going to be very surprised.
It's a t-shirt. It's a black t-shirt with white print. S-A-E? Is that the... Is that the fraternity?
Now, I will give you $100 if you wear it in public. I'm putting you on the spot. I have never heard Rob Ford laugh that loud.
That is very funny. What would make you think to do that?
There's something wrong with me. Now, I want you to know that
Sigma Alpha Epsilon.
Yes,
yeah, they've been in the news lately, folks.
You think?
Yeah. I would never be a member, apparently.
No, and I wouldn't either.
That is so funny.
You know what? I said before the show, I'm living dangerously today because I'm going to do something that is so, pardon the expression, off color.
Ah.
But you know, you know that my lovely bride, she sometimes if I plan something, and I don't plan a lot of stuff for the show, but if I plan something, I run it by her.
Right. Yeah.
She was horrified.
Was she really
horrified?
She said,
"There's no way you can do that." I said, do you understand our relationship?
You know what? But I love that about her.
She's so sweet.
You tell me this every now and then that she's...
You can't do that, she said.
This is one of the funniest things ever.
And I checked it out with some of my funny friends.
Right.
And they were on the floor.
Oh, this is... I mean, listen. Okay, here's what would not be funny. If the shirt had the actual racist chant printed on it.
Oh,
but
no,
the letters of the fraternity, that is so funny.
Well,
but now this is interesting because my first thought is, oh, I got to wear this and we'll put the picture on the website.
I can't wear this shirt. I don't think so. You know, I knew and really I set myself back like at least $20 and I thought I'm buying a shirt you will never wear, Connor will never wear, Rhonda will never, and of course no one in their right mind should. Well, here's something I do want to say about it. I don't think that we can slam SAE across the country.
No.
I'm not
at this point.
I'm not a fraternity guy.
I
think the stupidest comment I heard from this entire experience was, we were taught the song. Well, you know, the Nazis were taught how to sing, you know.
You can still raise your hand and say, shouldn't we not really be singing this?
If I taught you how to goose step, does that mean you should do it?
Right, that's right.
So the story is outrageous. It's horrible. And I thought that there was a funny moment there.
If you haven't, if you don't know, it's at the University of Oklahoma. I'm sure you know this story by now. Fraternity, they've been kicked off campus, and before the video released of them singing racist chants and everything.
Oh, it was unbelievable. Yeah, it's just, you know.
And you know what? Here's the thing that's sad about it. I'm so optimistic about our future because of so many young people. Rob, you're 24 years old. A lot of young people out there who seem to be genuinely colorblind, very open to all kinds of, you know, people in the world and religions. And I don't care if you're straight or gay, black, white, Asian, whatever. There's a lot of that right now with the younger people. And I love it. Yes, let me get on my soapbox, my pedestal here. And I do love it because they're showing us the way. They're showing us, we the older generation, some of whom are filled with prejudice and hate.
Yes.
They're showing us how we can be.
You never know. You might even someday just be sitting across from one.
Right. But the sad thing is that there are still some people, they're college students, who are chanting these awful things.
Yeah, but you know what makes me sadder than that? A lot of people like to think that this stuff just doesn't exist anymore, that there is not, you know, racial prejudice, there's not religious prejudice. There is still a lot of anti-Semitism and a lot of prejudice against black people and a lot of prejudice just against people that are different than you.
If you're different,
and it's always out of fear, lack of education, and, you know, what you've experienced and what you were sort of taught by your parents and all of that. And every time something like this happens or a synagogue has a swastika painted on it, there are things against black people that you read and see. It really depresses me because it tells me we're not as advanced as we think we are.
We're not. And when these things happen, they expose some very raw nerve endings.
Yes.
There's still a lot of problems. We're better, but we're nowhere near where we need to be.
No.
I'm hopeful that we'll get there, but I see, this is what bothers me about when it's young people, because the older folks who many of whom grew up with some of these prejudices, we're all going to die off at some point.
Yes.
And my hope is that there'll be enough people who don't have those feelings to kind of dominate. But now sometimes you see young people who have the feelings just as strongly as others.
Absolutely. But you and I, we've talked alone, restaurants, wherever we've been, mm-hmm. about our children.
Sometimes we haven't been able to sit together in those restaurants.
No. Yeah. Not if there's a signpost.
Right. Yeah. But we'll yell to each other, which I don't think they appreciate.
No. I was very surprised in one restaurant where it said no blacks can sit with Jews. Because usually it's just, you know.
Because they were plotting together.
Yeah, that's right.
They're very afraid
of
that.
We're going to take over. I don't know. It depresses me. It's upsetting. Yeah. But as I was going to say, we are trying very hard to bring our children up, you and I,
yes.
and many people of our yes. generation, to be colorblind and to be open and to be receptive and respectful of all people.
Yep.
I think that with my children, I have certain issues still with my children about other things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have any issues right now where this is concerned. They are incredibly enlightened,
that's
diverse,
great.
Colorblind children.
That's great.
And Connor is
the same
way.
Yep. Connor's the same
and
way.
And I think it's hopefully what most of us are doing.
The thing that I'm most proud of with Connor and excited about is that he's the same way, but he's also comfortable in his own skin.
Yes.
Which can sometimes be a problem. You know, when I grew up, the early part of my childhood, I may have said this on the show before, we lived first in the Bronx in New York,
mm-hmm.
then Southwest Washington, a very black environment, and as I got older, we moved into Fairfax County, Virginia, and I started to be exposed to different people. Now where I live, there's diversity. It's not as diverse as I would like necessarily, but Connor, let's say he's at an event, like a sporting event, and if there are 40 kids involved, then 12 or 15 of them will be black or whatever, or, you know, mixed race or whatever. But he's comfortable around everybody.
Yes,
and
I see that.
He's comfortable in his own skin and all that. So that's important to
me.
That's important.
I wouldn't be comfortable in his skin,
right?
Because no. I didn't grow up that way.
Yeah, and he's smaller, so it would be tight on you.
It
yeah.
would be a tight fit.
Right.
But, you know, I had a similar situation in some ways growing up grew up in a predominantly Jewish neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that can be, you know, I'll tell you, there were a lot of Jewish gangs.
Really?
And I was part of one for a while because I felt the pressure. And everybody there is expected to get involved in some kind of embezzlement. Because, you know, we don't do crimes. Jews don't do crimes of passion.
It's a different gang experience.
It is. Because right. we don't do, you know, we don't kill our wives or anything. You know, there's none of that. It's
right.
fraud.
Right.
It's fraud or embezzlement. That's a Jewish crime.
That's great.
Hey, we got to talk about something very, very
yes,
big.
Yes, we do. Most of you know this already, but can I have a
yeah,
drum roll,
yeah,
please?
Yeah, because you did it
well,
ahead of time.
I have to do it. Ladies and gentlemen, I have a new phone.
Tell them what kind, Tony
it is
Perkins.
The iPhone 6.
Whoa!
I finally
Ladies
took the
and
plunge.
Gentlemen.
I took the plunge.
We have had a version of Liftoff. all right. But
yeah.
I taketh away.
Yes.
I'm so proud of you for buying the iPhone. I
yes.
know that you had to take a tranquilizer when you went to the Verizon store, but I want to say something that's pathetic.
Okay.
Okay. Rob, let me tell you, Tony,
yes.
don't listen.
Okay.
Tony signed up for iPhone classes at the Apple store.
Oh, you're such a sucker.
No, it's free. It's free.
Yeah, I know it's free,
your
but
your time is worth more than that.
It's pathetic that you need it. I mean,
well,
really.
Hey, I'm brand new to this. I am completely, this is my first smartphone, as we've established.
Yes.
The NV is now retired.
I know.
I thank you for giving me a couple of weeks more life by giving me your NV.
Yes.
And
it was Ben's pleasure.
It was Ben, yeah. So I guess I can give it back to him, I guess.
I think you ought to sell it back to my son.
That's a good idea. That's funny.
So how many hours a week are you spending with the geniuses at the Apple store?
Well, so far, I haven't done it yet, but the first workshop is an hour. And I really think...
Yeah, but last night we went out for dinner and I showed you about 10 things that you could do on the phone.
Well, because I'm learning.
No, I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't think you need them.
Oh, well, Maybe not. Maybe not.
Does anybody else in your family have an iPhone?
Not an iPhone. My wife has a Samsung. My son has an iPod. And for those of you wondering, well, okay, of all the choices, why'd you get an what is this called? An iPhone 6.
What's it called? It's called an elevator.
It's so I can FaceTime with my son.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was one of the big. Now, here's the crazy thing. You want to know what happened? Obviously, we've been talking about this forever, and we talk about it on TV as well.
I would say our listeners are sick of it.
They're probably on. Well, maybe
it's done.
Yeah, now it's over. But this is after all of this delay. I woke up last Saturday morning and I laid in bed for like 5-6 minutes. And for some reason, I just started thinking about my phone situation. And I said, you know what? I've got some time today. I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. So after all of that, it was simply, all right, I'll do it.
When you were thinking about all of that, what was Rhonda doing?
She was still asleep.
All right. So you didn't need to involve her in this thought.
Not in the thought, but she was heavily involved in the, you know, she was kind enough to do a lot of the research for me and, you know, what would be best for me and all that kind of stuff. And then when I did go to the store to make the purchase, I did call her and asked her to come to be there to make sure I'm asking the right questions, I'm getting the right thing.
You do realize that this just continues to make it even more pathetic.
Well,
the fact that you needed your wife to be there.
I did.
Because you have, you
know. It's so confusing because, all right, I bought a 64, isn't it 64 gigabytes?
Oh, yeah, yeah, or 128.
Or 128 or, yeah. or 32 or 16, whatever it is. But then for your data plan, then there was conversation about, do you want 2 gigabytes?
You were lost. Yeah. You were lost.
You mean 2 out of the 62? Or what? Well, no, there's another 2. Well, am I getting 64? Then when they explained gigabytes were.
How long did
it
take for them to hate you?
They didn't hate me, but the whole process took 2.5 hours.
Really? Did they all have to go home after that?
Well, they made a little money, I guess.
And an hour and a half of it was flip-flopping between, do I go with the black or the champagne color?
Yeah.
But and you know what? I will say this. They were wonderful. They answered all my questions. I did have the next day, and I'm just talking about the sales process of it and the plan that I got and all that kind of stuff. The next day, I'm looking at my paperwork, and I found that I didn't understand it. You know, I thought I did this, but now it looks like I did this. So I had to call them back and get further explanation.
Well, they have a hotline for therapy, and I'm sure that's what you called.
That's what I should have called.
It's like Apple 1-1.
But
like,
I'm happy to have it, but I will say this. My experience, and they were very good with me. They were great. They were patient.
Yeah.
But the process is exactly what I thought it would be that I didn't want to go through. 2.5 hours of this, that, well, you can do this, and all the numbers are confusing.
Yeah.
You know, if you pay this amount for 2 years, then you get the phone at this price. But if you do the Edge plan and you do... Oh,
no, I'm right with you. You know, but you got a lot of problems.
Yeah.
And how did you decide to get the regular 6 as opposed to the 6 Plus when you've got so much money?
Because I didn't want that. That 6 Plus is pretty big.
Well, the 6 Plus is sort of close to an iPad. And since Rhonda has an iPad, she can also be very helpful because the iPad and the iPhone work the same
way. Well, both Rhonda and, as you can imagine, 11-year-old Connor have helped me.
Yeah,
they've shown me things. You were very kind. Gary showed me how to use Siri. I didn't know how to use Siri.
Mm-hmm. I have not shown you how to use Siri in ways that I use her.
Well, I'm sure. I was already wondering, are there other apps on here that I can... so I'm happy.
Well, I got to tell you something. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
I'm very proud that you did this. But, you know, I think I got to give some props somewhere.
Yes.
I would like to give some props to Dr. Brunswick.
Ah, Dr. Lionel Brunswick.
Dr. Lionel Brunswick. Yes. I think, listen, tell me if I'm wrong. I think that he was, he unearthed a lot of issues with you. But I think that he probably helped you get to the point where you actually got the iPhone.
Well, you know what? As much as I have to say, I thought he was a bit of a charlatan with some of his line of questioning.
Oh, you didn't tell him that?
Well, of course I'm not going to tell him that, but his line of questioning was certainly odd. He must have helped a little bit
because this
has taken years, and then finally I literally woke up one morning and said, I'm going to do it.
Well, I feel so good. You know what? Again, you know, we don't like to plan very much here, but I feel like there's another issue to deal with. Okay,
whoa. I got over an issue.
I know. We're past the iPhone, and I said I'm extremely proud.
Okay.
I think that we are not over issues that you have with your car.
And I
would like to maybe just see if Dr. Brunswick has a couple of minutes to maybe get into this. I'll have to explain the whole thing to him.
Yeah.
But can you dial up Dr. Brunswick?
You still have his number, right?
Yeah, I think I have it right here.
I don't know if he's home.
It's on speed dial number 6.
Oh, God.
All right, I got it. Let me prepare myself for this because he's very thorough.
Well, he may not even be there. You know?
That's true. Yeah. Are you calling his office?
You can hope he's not there if you want.
Dr. Lionel Brunswick, where is he? He comes out of California.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, Dr. Brunswick?
Yes, this is Dr. Lionel Brunswick. How may I help you?
Hi, you may remember me. This is Gary Stein calling with...
Gary Stein. Yes, I do recall you.
Now, do you remember the subject of the last phone call with me, which was with Tony Perkins, who's very famous?
Yes, I do recall Tony Perkins, yes, who is indeed very famous.
I am here too, Dr. Brunswick.
Mr. Perkins, a pleasure as always to hear your voice.
It is good to talk to you too, I must say.
You know, it's very interesting that you and Mr. Stein have called me.
Yes.
Because I don't know if you're aware of this, but I'm not only a psychiatrist, but I am also a practitioner of ESPN. that's extra sensory perception naked.
Whoa.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. Wait, naked for yourself or for others?
Well, I can't speak for others, but for myself, yes, I go to the office. I am naked as we speak.
Oh, my goodness.
I go to my office every morning. I take off all my clothes. I strip butt naked. And then, like most people, check their messages or check their emails. I open up my mind to basically see who is trying to connect with me psychically. And over the last, I would say, hour or so, I have been getting a lot of very strong messages from Mr. Perkins.
Oh, my goodness.
So, what are they?
This generally happens if I've made a strong bond with a patient or I have been drinking heavily. And I have not been drinking heavily this morning, at least not heavily for me. So I would have to say that I believed that there was a connection being made, and here you are calling me.
Wow, you're good.
Do you have any sense
yes,
of what
well,
that's
you.
About,
thank
doctor?
Well, there's a lot of information floating around in the doctor's head, but I can tell you this. Let me focus for one second. Let me take a deep breath here.
Okay.
All right. I'm starting to see four full-figured naked women.
Are you sure you're dealing with Tony?
Oh no, excuse me. Sorry, that's not Tony's line. Let me switch over here. Let me switch over. I'm sorry, the doctor gets confused sometimes. Here it is.
Can you plug me into that line? I kind of
yes,
like that
I can.
One.
For a small fee, I can let you have an extension.
he might have his own extension, doctor.
Yes, if I could have quiet for a moment, I'm trying to concentrate. I'm seeing numbers. I'm seeing 2,300. I'm seeing 2,300. That would be dollars. $2,300. And now I'm seeing letters. I'm seeing M, D. X. I'm seeing MDX and $2,300. Does that mean anything to you?
Yeah, you are rather remarkable, especially
thank you. I am a professional.
Yes. I recently spent, it's amazing how you can plug into this, not having spoken to either of us anytime recently. Yes, of course.
It is amazing.
Yes.
It's a gift.
I have an Acura MDX. You may recall this because in our previous conversation, I seem to be holding on to two old things.
Yes, I do. It's coming back to me
yes,
now.
And that's no way to talk to about your wife.
I had an old phone.
This is serious medical things. Here.
Yes,
I'm sorry. All right, an old
phone and an old car, an Acura MDX.
An old car.
Yeah,
yes.
From 2006. Okay. And I recently had some repair work done on it. And I had to get the radiator and the tires and the brakes redone, and it cost me $2,300. I did it at the dealer.
And what year is this car?
2006.
And you went where?
I went to the dealer. Yeah. I went to the dealer.
Now, you know, you both know how I work. I like to ask a series of questions, kind of hone down, really dig into the problem, and really see if we can all work together.
Yeah, you kind of take a long time, as I remember.
I am a professional, and sometimes these problems can be prickly, and it takes a while to get to the crux of it.
Okay.
You have a 2006 Acura.
Yes.
My first question is, you are a billionaire. So we established that in the last show, that you are a billionaire.
That's a
fallacy. So my question, may I just jump in here? This is not really about the Acura. I think there's a bigger issue here that you need to embrace your success. You need to wrap your arms around it and say, I'm Tony Perkins and I deserve all that I have acquired. I don't think you should run away from your success. The fact that you're a billionaire billionaire. I know that sometimes that might put people off, you know, less fortunate people like myself.
Not a billionaire, but go ahead.
Not a billionaire. All right. Well, let's not, you know, stick on that one problem. We can come back to that in another session. This is a 2006 Acura,
yes.
And you take it to the dealership.
Yes, I bought it at the dealership. They take good care of me.
You bought it at the dealership, and you
yes.
take it to the dealership.
Yeah.
Now, you're a very intelligent man. I can tell just by speaking to you.
Thank you.
I'm sure that the warranty has run out on your Acura.
Yes,
and you still take it to the dealership. Now, you could probably get a much better deal if you went to another reputable mechanic. If you just happened to take it to, say, Firestone Complete Auto Repair in Livingston, New Jersey, open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, close Saturday, close Sunday. If you mention the doctor's name at Firestone Complete Auto Repair, you can get $5 off your next oil change. I'm just suggesting that you don't really have to go to the dealership because the warranty has worn out and
yes.
it's gone. You could go to Firestone Complete Auto Repair in Livingston, New Jersey, open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, open to 2 o'clock on Saturday, closed on Sunday. Mention Dr. Brunswick's name and get $20 off your next brake job. And yet, you still take your car to
such
the dealership.
Such a professional.
Yes.
Let's say I'd gone to a Firestone Complete Auto dealership or whatever it is.
In Livingston, New Jersey, open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday, open to 2 o'clock on Saturday, closed on Sunday, mention doctor's name, and get $45 off your next tune-up. Yes, just say you did go there.
What do you think that work would have cost me there?
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up because I actually got some messages psychically this morning from them, and I believe that that type of work would have run you, say, $1,500 to $1,700.
Really?
You know, yes, and that's if you didn't have your rotors completely done. It was a very
he's
very
had an issue
specific,
with that. Yeah,
I was
yes,
going to say very specific messages you got.
I do. I really hone in on the problem, so I get very specific messages. When they do come to me, they don't always come to me, but when they do come to me, they're very specific. So now you're taking the car to the dealership.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes.
That is
okay.
Correct.
Now, my next question is, what color shirt are you wearing?
I'm wearing a blue. It's a blue shirt.
Blue. Oh,
it's
my God.
It's
okay.
Doctor, it's a faded blue.
It is a faded blue.
Even better. Faded blue. Hot dog. We're talking home run ball here. All right. Let me just make a few notes here. Okay. Faded blue shirt. All right. Very nice. Very nice. We're talking a big payday here.
Okay.
Now, you're very fortunate because, as you no doubt recall, I have a lot of experience with patients who have complicated relationships with inanimate objects.
Yes,
I once had a patient who was engaged to a Pontiac Grand Prix for a number of years.
Wow.
Yes, they were very happy together, but then, as in your case, the warranty ran out. Basically, gas prices went up. I can't really go into the specifics because of patient-doctor confidentiality.
Sure.
But let's just say that he is now with a nice Chevy Nova and getting much better gas mileage, and it worked out very nicely. So I just want you to know that I can help you with this. I just need to ask you a few more questions,
okay.
And then I think we can really move on to how we're going to deal with this.
Okay.
Oh, I bet we can.
Do you sometimes pull into the dealership even when your car doesn't need to be fixed?
Not usually. Well, yes, I should say this. Yes, I go there for all of my preventive maintenance, for the oil changes and all of that kind of thing.
We're talking about your car. We're not talking about you. But I'll take that as your car you're referring
yes,
to.
Yes, I was referring
then,
to
do
the
you
car.
Drink the free coffee? Do you hang around?
I do not.
Cookie, maybe?
I don't.
You,
they
you
have
don't.
They have donuts. I don't eat the donuts.
You don't eat the donuts?
I do
Is
not.
There a reason why you don't eat the donuts?
I don't like donuts.
You don't? Let me make a note of that. He doesn't like donuts. Oh, very nice. Very interesting. Well, hey, okay. We're moving along now. Okay.
Doctor, does it matter that the donuts are shaped like wheels?
That's a very interesting question. If you were a Freudian, you would probably say yes, that they are. But it is very important. I'm just curious. Donuts are such a delectable delight. I would never pass up a free donut if I had the opportunity to eat one. I find it difficult to believe that you drive into the dealership. Sometimes when your car doesn't even need to be repaired, you have the coffee, but you don't have the donuts. Are you making some kind of statement that you want a superficial relationship with the dealership, but you don't really want to commit to them?
Well, that's for you to say. That might be right. I think you're overly focused on the donuts, frankly.
Do you? Well, that could very well be. Sometimes I have a problem with that. Donuts and myself have had complications in the past, but that's a whole other story, which we probably don't want to talk about right now.
I was
on probation for several years as a result of it, but that's been taken care of. So now, this is very important. Do you sometimes do things to your automobile just so you're able to go to the dealership?
No, I do not.
You don't sabotage the car?
I do not sabotage the car. I take good care of my car. So no, I do not.
You give me your word of honor, Scott, or you never do that.
I promise, yes. Yes.
All right. Well, then I think we're honing in here.
Are you reaching conclusions, Doctor?
I am coming up with a conclusion here. I think Mr. Porkins is lonely. I think he doesn't quite have the internal strength yet to admit that he's a lonely person looking for a relationship. That's why he goes there, even though he doesn't have the donuts. He passes on those. But he's looking for something, some place to go to connect. That's why he's holding onto that car desperately. You know what my suggestion is?
What?
Hookers. that's my professional opinion.
That's
professional
opinion. Wow.
Yes,
doctor.
I think I've prescribed that for several of my patients, and it's amazing how well it's turned out for everybody involved. I made a couple of bucks. They had a good time. I think that's a possible way to go.
Wow.
You would save a considerable amount of money. For $2,200, I'm telling you, my friend, you could party like nobody's business. That would be serious party right there. But I feel like we need to work a little bit longer on this problem, but my time is a little pressed today because, again, I am in the process of pulling in my psychic messages while naked. So
yes. I
do have other patients that I have to talk to this morning.
Well,
so what I'd like to do is I'd like to set up about 25 more sessions.
Really? 25?
Why 25, Doctor?
Well, as it turns out, I was at the track last week, and I was attempting to see if my psychic powers worked while I was fully clothed, and I'll be doggone, they didn't. The doctor dropped a bundle at the old track of room. I figure 25 sessions ought to pretty well solve the problem and also kind of put me back in the black. You know what I'm saying?
So, well, doctor, I appreciate that. I will take that into consideration. I can't commit to 25 right now, and I will take your advice.
How about 20? How about 20? 20 would knock off a big part of the debt.
Well, doctor,
I mean, I'm willing to talk here. I'm willing to negotiate.
It is unbecoming of you to negotiate this at this time. We'll talk about it. We'll talk about
it. All righty. One last thing before we go,
yes.
I would just like to say that I want you to take hope here because the doctor is here because I care,
and I
feel like I could really help you with your problem. Now, that's the good news. The bad news is I feel that even if you did come to terms with your fixation on your automobile,
mm-hmm.
as you did with your fixation on your phone, I'm afraid that your son would still feel that Mr. Stein is funnier. I don't really know if there's much I can do about that. We could continue to talk about that situation. I am a doctor, not a magician, so I don't know if I could really help with that.
I don't think you can. I don't think you can.
Well, I'm sad because I do care for Mr. Perkins dearly and very deeply. I know that he's in pain as a result
yes,
of that. But this is the burden that some of us have to carry, not Mr. Stein, because he is funny, but you will have to carry that burden, I'm afraid, for some time more.
You're really not helping me right now, but okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, then I'll go then if I'm not helping. That's generally the time when I hang up when people tell me you're no longer helping me. I feel like I've done my best. So,
thank you, Dr.
Well, it was lovely speaking to both of you.
It's great to hear from you.
I will be calling shortly with our next session, Mr. Perkins.
Very good. I look forward to it.
Remain remarkable, really.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doc.
Take care.
I appreciate it. All right. Bye.
Bye. That may be the first time a psychiatrist has said hookers. That's your solution.
Are you feeling better?
I'm feeling a number of things.
I call him a visionary myself.
A visionary. Dr. Lionel Brunswick, there you go, once again.
Calling naked from his office.
My goodness, that's a whole vision I don't want to see. All right, I think it is time. We've got to get Flip Orley is waiting in the green room out there. I think we got to get Flip in here.
Very good. Let's go.
The Tony Perkins Show. Featuring Gary Stein.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, as promised earlier in the show, our guest today is just a master at what he does. Very, very funny man, very talented man, comic, hypnotist, Flip Orley is here.
He's here. He's in the room. He's in the room.
That's really nice. I wish you had set the bar lower, though.
I know. We got the hypnotist music here.
This is just to get you in the mood.
Oh, it doesn't take much to get me in the mood.
Whoa, well. I see. You can bring the music.
This could be a very different interview than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Welcome to the show. We're glad to have you here.
Thanks. This is really a nice getup, a nice setup you got going.
Not bad for a podcast, right?
It's amazing, actually. This is better than most of the radio stations I've done across the country.
Professional studio and all of that. I believe you and I met years ago. Maybe you did the Fox 5 morning show.
What was he wearing?
This morning, as a matter of fact. Well, I don't remember everything.
Oh, okay.
It may have been on Fox 5.
I think so, actually.
I think so. Many, many years ago. Or when I was in New York at Good Morning America. It may have been there.
I want to say it was D.C. because not to mention a competitor.
Mm-hmm.
But in New York, I had done another morning show a few times.
Oh, the Today Show. You can mention them.
Oh, okay. It was the Today Show.
Yeah. I'm no longer affiliated with GMA.
Go ahead. Mention it.
It may have been the Today Show. I must say, and you might want to bleep this out, I guess, I found Bryant Gumbel to not be very nice to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
He wouldn't meet with me.
He wouldn't meet with you?
No. In fact, I was hypnotizing people outside Rockefeller Center. You know how now they have big performances all the time?
Whatever? Yeah.
In the day, we're going back years ago, they really didn't do that a lot, if at all. And so they wanted me to hypnotize people. So I'm out there, and they gave me an earpiece, which I forget what the initials are.
IFB.
Yeah, an IFB. Yeah.
Or a hearing aid.
They gave me the wrong feed.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yeah, they gave me the director's feed.
Oh, and you could hear
everybody in the studio. And Bryant Gumbel was not keen on my appearance.
Oh, no.
Wow.
So I'm trying to hypnotize people, right? It's like, everybody take a deep breath slowly in. And I hear in my ear, no, I'm not doing it.
My goodness.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, that wasn't the only time that happened. There was some hubbub years ago with Bryant Gumbel because of, I know you want to laugh at me for hubbub.
I'm already going with hubbub.
Sadly, I'm on the same page.
Thank you, Flip. I think we might be close.
Like, Tony, you are so old-timey.
We each have kids the same age,
right.
And I think we're very, very compatible.
Yeah.
You guys are bonding. I'm going to back away.
But there was hubbub. You know, it's the only word I know. Because Bryant was talking about...
There might have been a brouhaha.
A brouhaha. Because he was talking about Willard Scott. He was tired of Willard's clowning and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it got out. People heard that. Someone heard it. And it was a big scandal. This is like 20 years ago.
You know, listen, we are a very PC show and we don't say anything bad about anybody, but you know what? He is one of the most brilliant, pretentious jerks I've ever known in my life. And I think that he enjoys his presence a lot more than other people do.
Yeah, that's what you hear.
But you can see it. You can see it on his... I like his show because he does great interviews, but he seems very superior on his own show.
Yeah.
I think he does a great job. I'm perfectly happy never to meet the gentleman.
Yeah, me too.
Mm.
You know, you say it was a brouhaha. It could easily have turned into a Donnybrook.
Was Donny Osmond on?
I like that. Donnybrook.
Yeah, Donnybrook.
Even better.
Wow.
Flip comes to us. I do want to mention straight from the DC Improv, you know, the best comedy club in town, where he has been performing. And how were your shows? How do I put this?
What's he going to say? Lousy?
No. You did a show last night. How was your show last night?
The shows were really good. And again, you're right. Most people are very good self-promoters. I am not. So I'm always much too honest and my mouth gets me in trouble. So when a show does not go well and someone goes, how's the show? It's like, oh, it was horrible. And here's why. But DC's been really good to me and for many, many years now.
Well, yeah, you're a favorite in DC.
I truly love this town and I love this club. It's my favorite club in the country. Because they do comedy right.
Really? That's great. That's a lot to say.
And the thing of it is, like, they have maintained a club atmosphere, which I think comedy works best in, you know, lower ceilings and everybody sort of tightly packed in. And it just has a really good feel, and they put entertainment first.
You kind of described a boxcar, but I get what you mean. Because people being tightly
packed. Low ceilings, tight packed.
Tightly packed is like, you know, we're on a train together, you know. So, okay.
Tell me a little bit.
I'm doing so much editing right now.
No, don't edit.
Why would you edit? We don't.
Well, no, I mean, it just, again, it easily could have slipped into a different conversation where Mr. Stein was making comments about a tightly packed train car.
I suspect that's where
I was absolutely going there.
So that's where, okay, yeah.
I was going there.
Okay, it's never far from your mind.
I don't know why. You know what? I have always been a lot more connected to the whole thing about the Holocaust, more so than my father, who lived through the period. I don't know what it is. I think that I was there. I mean, I don't really believe in reincarnation or anything, but I am so connected. I must have been there. Flip, sometime you'll have to try to get that out of me and hypnotize me.
Well, there is such a thing as past life regression. And what regression is, it's more than just remembering the past. It's actually going backwards in time to relive the past. So if I were to do regression with you now to say I'm 5 years old, it would be in your lifetime as a 5 year old. And it wouldn't just be the memories like, yeah, I remember during Christmas or during Hanukkah, you know, blah, 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 whatever. You would literally go back and your mannerisms and your speech and your vocabulary would go back to a 5 year old.
He does that sometimes on the show without hypnotism.
Really? That is delightful.
That's why sometimes there are Pampers available here.
Why you gotta go there?
I don't know.
That just speaks of convenience. That's all that
it
is.
It does. Why get up?
You know, once you get past the stigma, it's like I don't see anything bad. There's nothing bad about Pampers.
Right. All right. The stigma and the stink.
Right. Let me ask you a question, because you're talking about this past life regression and all that kind of thing. And some people might not know this about you, because you are a comic and a hypnotist. And I think a lot of people have this image of, you know, someone who's on stage in a comedy club hypnotizing people. You know, you're going to embarrass the people that you bring up from the audience, and it's some kind of a joke or something. But you're a real, I don't know if it's certified, but you're a certified hypnotist. You help people too. It's not just for laughs.
Well, sometimes on purpose, you know, and then sometimes it's sort of by accident. And it just sort of depends on the circumstances. So I was working in Denver, Colorado. This goes back years ago. And I like to parody pop culture. I just think pop culture is funny. And I especially like game shows, because to me, it's funny that people get on national TV, talk shows as well, and they expose themselves to some kind of personal thing for like a washer dryer combo.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Right.
And once it's on TV, now, especially with the internet, it's never going to go away. Not ever. So from time to time, we'll parody the Newlywed Game, because to me, that's just really funny that these newlyweds, like, where's the first place the two of you made Whoopi? You know, and all their parents and grandparents are watching.
Right.
So what I have to do, though, is I have to take people who don't know each other and marry them off. And the backstory of the suggestion is, you've been married about 9 months, you're blissfully happy, you're thrilled to be on a Newlywed Game. And then you set up different scenarios where you go, we've done the 5-point questions. Couple number one, you're in first place with 5 points. Couple number two, you're tied with 5 points. Couple number three, you're tied with 5 points. And then you take the most volatile couple. And then it's like, couple number four, you're in last place with no points. Zero, none, zippity doo-dah. You each blame each other. You're convinced the other one is throwing the game. And to just make a lot of conflict. So then you go through the whole thing of asking the women the 10-point and 25-point bonus questions. You bring the guys back and see if they can match the answers up, which they can't.
Right.
And then you watch the fights ensue. which is fun. And so I did that in Denver, and I go back to Denver the next year, and a couple comes up to me and they go, do you remember us? And I go, I've done a lot of shows.
Right.
They go, we were here about a year ago. We didn't know each other. He was on a date with someone. She was on a date with someone. We were both up on stage. You married us in the Newlywed Game. After the show, we really felt like this compatible thing going on. Oh. So we each ditched our dates. We met up for like a late dinner, and long story short, we're married now.
Holy cow.
Wow.
Yeah, so you're kidding.
So that was inadvertent, but...
Wow.
That's great.
That was nice. Well, if it worked out, it was nice. If not, I want no responsibility.
Yeah, right. That's right. You could be called into a courtroom later on.
Yeah, I've dodged that bullet a few times.
I think that's very cool. You studied hypnotism. What? You have a degree in what, psychology?
I went to school at University of Arizona and initially majored in psychology, and then realized I didn't want to be a psychologist, you know, because there's not much you can do with a bachelor's in psychology. Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Not to sound ugly about it, but the thought of getting like a master's or a PhD and then sitting 8 hours a day in a room hearing people tell me their problems seemed a little depressing.
Yeah.
Yes.
So
a lot of therapists say that.
Yeah,
they do.
I would think helpful, important, but it wasn't for me. So I switched my major to communication. Mm-hmm. And then with a minor in psychology.
That was my major.
Well, yeah, but you've made a better, How'd that work out?
I've been very fortunate, I would have to say. So you had two separate things going on. You had the comedy going on. You had the hypnotism going on. When did you, I can see, you know, the helping people with hypnotism and all that kind of stuff. When did you discover comedy and what made you, because at first, correct me if I'm wrong, when you first started going out there, you were just doing straight stand-up,
right? Straight
stand-up, yeah. How long did you do that?
Almost 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, who's to say if I would ever become really a proficient at it or become a headliner? Who knows if, you know, because most comics move to LA or New York and with the hopes of getting like TV or movies, right, or something like that. So who's to say?
Right.
But so, yeah, my life had two very different, distinctly different paths. I wanted to be a comic from the age of four.
Really?
Yeah. And you know, like when you're 4 and 5 and 6 years old, it's like, I want to be a whatever. And then over time, it's like, I want to be a football player. Then I want to be an astronaut, a fireman. At 4, I want to be a comic. At 10, I want to be a comic. At 15, I want to be a comic. Like, I never changed that interest. All the while, in 6th grade, I took an interest in hypnosis, and so I started reading up on it. Not with the interest of being a hypnotist, just mm-hmm. learning about it because I thought it was cool.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
So, in high school, I started working with friends of mine and students, and then in college, I was doing a lot of private work with students to improve their memory, reduce stress, anxiety, and tension. I've worked with some athletes for sports performance. Just because I thought, again, it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm doing comedy about 3 years, and I have a roommate in college, and he starts going, you know, you do hypnosis. And I go, yeah. And he goes, you ought to do that on stage. And we fought about it for 6 months, and he was just harassing the hell out of me. And at one point, I finally said to him, I go, look, if I do hypnosis on stage one time, would you leave me alone? And he goes, yeah. So I did it on a dare.
Uh-huh. Kind of. Wow.
So I called a local club owner at this time in Phoenix, Arizona, which is where I'm originally from. And after he got done laughing at my proposal, he goes, oh, you're serious. And I go, yeah. And so I went up on stage at a club that's no longer there called Chuckles Phoenix, yeah. Arizona. Yeah, all the great comedy club names.
When comedy was super hot and there were clubs everywhere.
Oh, you could literally Chuckles, open up a club in your living room. And
absolutely.
You could sell out, like, seven nights a week.
Absolutely.
So he gave me like 30, 45 minutes on a Monday open mic night. And I was convinced that nobody would take me seriously. I was convinced I'd get no volunteers. So I didn't plan a show out. Like, mm-hmm. I literally just thought I would get up on stage, humiliate myself, and then tell my roommate to leave me alone.
Right.
So I briefly explained it. I asked for volunteers. People rushed the stage. I got like 20 volunteers. And now I'm like, holy crap, now what? So I very insecurely start doing a hypnotic induction. I watch people's like pupils dilating and eyes rolling up in their head. And now, like, 15 out of 20 people are clearly, clearly hypnotized. And wow. Now I'm in a position, it's like, okay, I didn't plan any material. Mm-hmm. And so you, having done stand-up, know the uh-huh. cardinal rule, you don't steal.
Right, that's right.
You're not
absolutely
a hack, you
don't
say, you do original stuff.
Absolutely right.
So I stole Pat Collins' show.
That's great.
Funny.
I had no other options. I'm like, I am screwed.
It was an emergency situation.
It was, and I was like, she better forgive me. She didn't know who it was, it didn't matter. But after that show, I started getting offers all the time, going from open mic nights as a stand-up for like, you know, $5 or, mm-hmm. or gas money or free beer to like a guy walked in and goes, man, that was great. Would you do my corporate party? And I go, yeah. He goes, I'll give you $500. It's like, okay, free beer, yeah. $500. Looks like I'm a hypnotist. Right.
And is your roommate your manager now? Does he get a lot of money?
We no longer speak, but.
That could be another court case coming up.
Possibly. Yeah, well, now after the whole thing with blurred lines, yeah, you never know.
Yeah, right. That's right. That's right.
I guess we shouldn't ask you what happened. But.
You hear the guys who, I mean, yes, if you can get a talk show or have a sitcom or whatever, fantastic. If it goes well, most of them don't go well,
sure.
But if it goes well, that's great. But most of the ones who are true stand-ups, that's what they love. They love getting back on the stage. That's what gets everything else going. That's kind of the heartbeat of everything else that they do. And if you're a real comic, which you clearly are, you're a working comic. How many weekends are you working?
It's really varied depending on what's going on in my personal life.
Gotcha.
So when I was single, 48 weeks a year.
Yeah.
During some of the other rocky relationships that I've been in, like 45 weeks a year.
Every single night.
And then I had been married, and I have a child with my ex-wife. And so we went through a pretty long, complicated divorce.
Mm.
And so during that period, it dropped down to about 15 weeks a year, which was difficult for two reasons. First of all, you know, when you need the money the most for the divorce, I wasn't earning it.
Right.
And then when you also needed sort of the relief of the stress and tension, I wasn't getting it.
Right.
Can I just turn to Tony for just a second? Do you mind?
No,
just
please.
For a second?
Absolutely.
Can I ask something?
Yeah, sure. I'm sorry.
No, I'm just curious and I wanted to clear it.
Yeah.
I wanted to clear it and make sure that
ahead.
I can.
Let me just say something before you ask something.
Yeah, go ahead.
Gary has hostility issues, I feel.
That just came out.
You know, I may
I don't
want
have
to,
a problem with it.
I may want to engage you to do some work with Gary.
Well, I always keep a roofie with me. So we can just go that route.
So here's one question. You said you were married a couple of times and you're a hypnotist. So obviously people break up because things aren't going right and there are certain things about your partner you don't like. Why couldn't you hypnotize them out of the things that you don't like about them and then make them a perfect spouse?
Really, really good question. I've got a better question for you. How is it as a hypnotist that you lost everything you owned in every divorce?
Mm,
wow.
Yeah. I know. I've never been able to keep the house.
Are you? Oh, wow.
Wow.
Can't you hypnotize them into giving you the house?
Yeah, that's the whole deal. It's like, you know, I mean, hypnosis is a really powerful tool and it can help people to be entertained and, you know, stress management, sleeping better. Any goal that you have in your life, it can help with. It's not a magic wand. So like people go, I've had people go, make me stop smoking. And I go, well, you want to stop smoking? Well, just make me stop smoking. Well, do you want to stop? My doctor said I have to stop.
Oh,
yeah.
Do you want to stop? Right. Well, my wife's always bugging me. It's like, okay, well, I keep asking if you want to stop and you keep telling me no.
Right.
And that's the thing. If you're not dedicated to making some change in your life, hypnosis is not going to be overly effective. So for instance, with me in a past relationship, if they weren't really interested in becoming a nice person, then no magic wand that I possessed or crystal ball would have.
Yeah, they've got to be kind of a willing subject.
Well, you also have to know that you're not a nice person, and people who are not nice don't know they're not nice.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Now, I am fully self-aware. I do know that about myself.
Tony and I were talking about this yesterday, knowing that you were coming in, and I don't believe that I can be hypnotized. Now, I know that, and Tony doesn't really believe that he can be, because both of us, you know, we kind of like to be in control.
Right.
And if I say that I want to be hypnotized and have you do it, but the bottom line is that I don't believe I can be.
Right.
Can you get past that?
In some cases you can, and a lot of it's situational. So, for instance, you get up on stage, and again, you guys are in the entertainment business, and you're used to controlling your own show. Now you're up on my stage, and so you feel like you're giving up control, which I think is very disconcerting for someone who runs a program.
Mm-hmm.
I just do. So you may be less likely to cooperate with me and to let me sort of be sort of the co-captain.
Mm-hmm.
I think it'd be harder for me to give up the idea that I might do something foolish that would embarrass me that I don't know is happening.
Okay, well, that's called drugs and alcohol. The thing
Well, it applies to that too.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but the thing with hypnosis, and this is the big misnomer, what you see on TV and in the movies, what you read in books, is really great for entertainment.
Yeah.
But it's not accurate. So when a person is hypnotized, maybe their eyes are closed, maybe their body's slumped over, and they look like they're sleeping, and then they'll perform suggestions given to them, in most cases, by the hypnotist, so it looks like they've lost control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is absolutely not at all the case.
They're still in control.
You're completely conscious, aware, you know what you're doing, you're in control, you can accept or reject any suggestion. If you reject it, there's nothing I can do about it.
But do you or do you not know you're hypnotized?
In many cases, people don't know they're hypnotized.
Okay.
And that's the weird deal, because the preconceived notion of what they must be experiencing should they be hypnotized is not at all reality. In fact, I have a lot of DC stories, one of which was I was working at the DC Improv, and there was a woman up on stage who was there in the front row with four of her friends, so five women in total. She gets up on stage. She's probably one of the best volunteers I had that year.
Mm-hmm.
Deeply hypnotized, really suggestible, very funny. And halfway through the show, she got up and she left the stage. She just walked off the stage, went back to her seat in the audience. And I thought she woke up. And so I just let her be.
Right.
So I finish the show, say thanks, good night. And I go back to the green room, which is not true because I don't like green rooms. I went to the office. And the manager came running in. This is 3 minutes after the show. And the manager goes, you have to come back out of the showroom. And I go, why? She goes, that lady's still hypnotized.
Wow.
And I go, well, just bring her back to the office and I'll work with her. She goes, no, you don't understand. She's stuck to her chair. And her four friends are on the stage screaming into the microphone. This is a quote now. The four women were screaming for me to come out saying, get his ass out here. He broke the bitch.
Oh, my
God. Whoa.
Whoa.
I don't think that needs to be bleeped.
No, I think we're fine.
That, and I'm not using the B word. Well, I'm just quoting what was said by other women.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you had to go out and get her out of it.
Yeah. And the thing, the other thing that's really funny with hypnosis is, again, what people often don't realize, it's a very relaxed, calming, very comfortable state of mind and body. So in this very fast-paced world that we live in, where people are constantly full of stress and anxiety and worried about bills and downsizing and all the other stuff, suddenly for some brief period of time, an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours, you just shed all that. And then when the show's over, the hypnotist goes, I'm going to count from one to three. When I reach three, I want you to open up your eyes and be wide awake. And somewhere in their mind, like, ooh, I'm not ready for that. I really like how I feel. So they can remain hypnotized for some longer period. They're not going to be stuck.
Right.
You don't just have zombies walking around.
That's what you've seen in movies and sitcoms for years. Yeah. In fact, that scenario that the hypnotist leaves town and you're still hypnotized walking around, you know.
And I've had people ask me that question on stage before, because I'm very flexible and informal and I try to be interactive. So I've had people literally, because you put what they do in movies often, which is the hypnotist leaves town.
Right.
Right? Which is fine. Every time it's ever been asked, someone raise their hand, I go, yeah, you have a question. They go, yeah, let's say you get me hypnotized. And I go, okay. And they go, and then let's say you have a heart attack and die. What happens to me? I'm like, why do you have to kill me off in this scenario? Why can't I just leave?
That's great.
So one of a few things actually happens. Either, like, let's say I do have a heart attack and die. They would hear me hit the ground because they're consciously aware. And somewhere in their mind, they go, wow, that didn't sound right. And they would wake themselves up.
Oh.
Or... they would sit there in a hypnotic state of mind for some period of time, then realize that I wasn't talking anymore and realize there was a disconnect and they'd wake themselves up. Or they'd sit there in a hypnotic state of mind for some period of time, get so relaxed they'd fall asleep like a normal night's sleep, and then they wake up a little bit later. Each time they'd be fine.
Wow. Fascinating. Here's the thing about your show, and for most comics. When you go on stage, you have your act, but you allow for, on any given night, you're going to shift things around. Things are going to change. The audiences react differently. And so it's always a different show. When I did comedy, I don't know why it developed this way, but, a lot of the gigs were weekend gigs, Friday, Saturday, two shows Friday. This is when it was three shows Saturday.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah, most of the clubs. And I would go into it. I would kind of do it like I was an athlete. Let's say the first show Friday went well. So after the show, I would think to myself, okay, I'm 1-0.
Right.
Let's say the next show wasn't so great. I'm 1-1. And I would my hope would be to come out of the weekend 3-2 or better, have a majority of the shows go well. That's what I would shoot for. And, it was kind of a game of percentages, really.
Right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
You could have been, but it's perception. So you could have been wrong. Maybe you put pressure on yourself because you said, okay, well, that was a bad show.
Well,
it wasn't.
Here's what's funny to me, though. And Flip, that's a great...
We don't always know.
Well, but see, that's the thing about... you're absolutely right. But for me, comedy is so pure... that you would think, yeah, you do know. I mean, they're laughing or they're not laughing.
I am a perfectionist. And so I have actually attended every show I've ever done.
Well, yes.
It's good that you were there.
Yeah. Well, I like to.
Someone had to watch it.
But so consequently, what happens is you sort of know in your mind what you want the show to look like or sound like, and you know sort of every word out of your mouth, and you know the cadence, and you know the facial expressions and the pauses, and you know what you're supposed to do. So there have been many times where I've left the stage completely unhappy with my own performance. And even if I'm nitpicking, there's just things that I didn't like. And sometimes I have been so in my head that I sort of lost track of whether the audience was laughing or not.
Interesting.
Because I was just so disappointed. Let's say again, during this period where I was going through a divorce, I really had to struggle to be present and to be in the moment on stage.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I learned early on. So I'd get off stage and someone would come up to me and they go, oh my God, that was a great show. But again, me being honest with people, I go, no, it really wasn't. And they go, what? And then I would start giving them chapter and verse as to everything that didn't go well.
Oh, no.
And you could see their smile turn into like a frown and then like, wah, wah. And one day, and this goes back years ago, a friend of mine pulled me aside. He goes, what are you doing? I go, well, they said it was a great show and it wasn't. They go, do you know what you just did? I go, I was honest. I told them the truth. They go, no, you stole their night from them.
Yeah.
And I go, what do you mean? They go, if all they know is they left their home, they came to your show and they had a good time, that's all they know.
Yeah.
Why do you think you have the right to say that not only did you not have a good time, but you're stupid for feeling like you did?
Right.
So in that regard, I struggle with that. I mean, I really struggle with getting off stage, being the least bit satisfied with the performance I did that night.
I think you need to go to a hypnotist to stop to stop doing that to yourself. Because I do think, you know, the expression that we are our own worst critic, I think you might be the poster boy for that.
There's
I'm not
a
sure.
possibility.
Yeah, because, you know, it's very, but the thing is, we're in such a subjective world, doing podcasts, doing stand-up, it's very, very hard to really know where you're at and to also stay positive, you know?
Well, I've never stayed positive. And that's,
I like how you say it calmly. And,
Again, I'm very self-objective and self-aware, but I mean, my manager used to yell at me all the time, and he'd go, how'd the show go? I go, well, the audience thought it was fun, but, you know, it just really left a lot to be desired. And he goes, you just need to understand you're not doing the show for you.
Right, right.
Like, oh.
One of the most interesting experiences, and it was not a pleasant experience, but from when I was doing stand-up, I had a night where I was in Richmond. This was in the late 80s, opening for Sheila E.
Was it a a comedy club, clearly.
It was not a comedy club. It was a music venue. In fact, the stage was high, way too high for comedy. The audience, they were standing, and they were at my feet. In fact, during this show,
you must have liked that.
They're at my feet. One of the people in the audience actually reached up and untied my shoes while I was performing.
Were you being upskirted?
I may have been.
Did you fall down?
No, I did not fall down. But I'm opening for Sheila E., who at the time was huge, you know, protege of Prince and all. She was hot. She had a glamorous life, was out and all that kind of stuff. It's the worst set I've ever had. It was not my fault. So I didn't feel like, oh my God, I wasn't very good. It's just that they weren't there for a comic. They wanted Sheila E. to come out.
Right.
And there were rumors that Prince might be in town.
Oh boy.
So they had no interest in me. I don't know that I ever got a laugh. They're loud. I'm out there for 25 minutes.
Did anybody think you were Prince?
My hair was rather Prince-like at the time. So afterwards, I go backstage to the club manager's office, and I said, I'm really, really sorry. And he said, what? I said, I'm really sorry. That was terrible. No one even laughed. He said, you were on for 25 minutes. That's all I care about. And he gave me my money.
Wow.
Obviously, that's not what you're shooting for,
you know,
as a comic.
Yeah,
but it was like,
yeah,
all right, I understand. I took up 25 minutes. That's what
it
this
makes
was about.
It real, but that's not fun.
Right.
Have you ever done a set where not only in your mind, you know, it didn't go well, but like it was really clear it didn't go well?
Yeah.
And so the last thing you want to do is be anywhere around where the audience is going to be, because you don't have to face them.
Right.
But sometimes you can't avoid it. So sometimes you are where you are and people file by. And this is the comment from people that's nice, well-meaning, but I hate the most. Nice try.
Oh.
Have you ever got that or something?
Nice try.
I
would think that just a bad comment would be nice, because that's not really very complimentary.
No,
but
nice try
drives a nail through it.
It is just one of the most offensive, rude, demeaning things to hear from someone.
Oh, if anybody said that to me, I'd find a therapist.
Can I tell you something, though? I may have mentioned this on the show once, and maybe you could appreciate this. The first time I ever did stand-up, and it was kind of a similar situation to what you described. I would MC shows like in high school and college, and I would always tell some jokes, whatever, that I would write. And, you know, in looking back, they were the most generic jokes you could write. But people would always say, hey, you're funny. I was a funny kid in school. You're funny. You should do stand-up. And literally in college, a group of people said, why don't you go? It was Garvin's Comedy Club. Do you remember Garvin's?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. They said, why don't you go open mic night? We'll come out. So I was kind of pushed into it. I was like, okay, great. I did open mic night my first time, 6 or 7 minutes, and did great. It was fantastic. Now, again, in looking back, the most generic jokes you could ever.
Had a lot of friends there, didn't you?
There were some friends there, but I genuinely did very well in the room. It was good. I went back 2 weeks later. I'm thinking, I'm a comedian. I wrote 7 new minutes. And died a horrible death. I don't think I got, maybe I got 2 laughs that night, whatever it was. But it was that kind of hooked me, because I thought, well, this is interesting. How could I be, you know, 2 weeks ago, I'm the greatest thing on earth, or so I thought. And now tonight, I can't buy a laugh. And that, it was almost like the intellectual part of it fascinated me.
You are very complicated.
We actually have not just similar stories, but identical stories.
Really?
Absolutely identical. First professional stage I ever got on was an open mic night at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, California.
Yeah, I know it.
Generic jokes and silly, and I look back, and it's almost like uncomfortable thinking about, oh, I can't believe I talked about that, but did really, really, really well.
Mm-hmm.
Did really well. Went back to Phoenix, Arizona, and in that case, invited everyone I knew, much too confident, and knowing I was going to kill, mm-hmm. and it was kind of an F you mm-hmm. to a lot of people from my past, like, look what I'm doing.
Your second gig.
I couldn't buy a laugh. I mean, not a one, and for whether it was the 5 or the 7 minutes, literally people looked at me like, you know, ooh, this is a painful death.
Oh,
and I don't know how I got back up on stage after that.
You know, sometimes the audiences, some members of them just don't engage.
Right.
Isn't that weird when sometimes you see someone sitting there with their arms folded? I'm like,
especially well, in they're or towards daring the front
you.
Row.
Yeah. Yeah. Why did you come here? You don't look like you want to laugh. You look like you're challenging me to make you laugh. Why are you here if you don't want to laugh? But anyway, I would wonder sometimes what percentage of the audience does it take to turn a crowd that might be a good crowd into a bad crowd.
There is definitely a crowd mentality that typically begins to develop.
Yes.
And so also on stage with volunteers. So if you get a few good volunteers, they can really turn some mediocre or non-cooperative volunteers into much better volunteers.
Mm.
At the same time, like mm-hmm. a few bad audience members can really start to turn the tide in the audience and actually affect the show,
yeah.
much like the volunteers that you have on stage. Sometimes you read it correctly where someone's challenging you or their arms are crossed or in a bad mood. You don't know if they had a fight with their spouse. I mean, you don't know if they got fired that day from work. You don't know
true.
What it is.
True.
About a month ago, I was doing a show, as it turns out, in Dallas, and my wife, who came with me, and she was sitting in the front row. And so I'm doing the show. I'm doing the whole hypnotic induction, and she has her hands down towards her lap, and she's texting. And I'm trying to pay attention to the audience, but I keep glancing over at my wife. It's like she's texting, and I'm a little bit miffed, yeah. you know, about the whole thing. And so I'm watching, and like 2 minutes goes into 3 and 3 into 5. It's like she's not texting; she's on the internet. She's just, what is she like on Pinterest?
Oh.
Is she, like I don't know what. And now it's like we're gonna have to have a conversation.
Right.
After this show, because like if you want to be on your phone, that's fine. Just don't be in the front row
right.
because everyone can see you.
Right.
So at one point, I say to the volunteers on stage, I'm going to count from 1 to 3. When I reach 3, I want you to bring your right arm up from your lap, extending your right arm directly out in front of you and make it tight fist with the right hand. And I go, here we go. 1, 2, 3. And so their hands come up. And out of the corner of my eye, I see my wife's hand coming up from her lap. Her phone wasn't in her lap. It was on the table. What I didn't realize is I had hypnotized her, and she was out like a light the entire time.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness.
I felt like such an idiot. It's like, holy crap, I'm glad I didn't talk. And like,
she got hypnotized by association? I mean, you
can be hypnotizing the audience. I mean, if you listen and follow along, I just somehow along the way, I don't know how I connected the dots, assuming she had her phone in her lap.
Wow.
I just thought she was texting.
You jumped to that.
Yeah.
I felt really.
Maybe you were hypnotized.
I want to bring up the elephant in the room, because I'm sure.
That's not fair to whoever you're referring to as the elephant. That could be me. Could be Rob. I don't know.
It could be a compliment.
doesn't feel like one.
Could be a compliment.
Well, what is the elephant in the room?
Well, the elephant is the room, because I'm sure some listeners are wondering, okay, can you hypnotize one of us if we're willing to be hypnotized? Is that a hard thing to do? I mean, do you do it on demand or what?
I kind of don't, and I can explain this. I'm really lazy. and let me give you an example of how I can define lazy. I figured out a way to entertain an audience by getting other people to do it for me.
Right.
That's right.
That's not lazy. That's amazing.
That's
not every stand up has that. That's amazing.
Half your act is the audience.
Oh, half or more than that. Yeah. I mean, in many cases, I'll just stand back and watch things develop. So I'm getting paid to be in the audience. This is the best.
Wow. So because you're such a good guy, which we can tell just by you sitting here, you probably share some of the money with the audience that helps you.
I really don't. And the reason is because charity starts at home.
And it ends there.
No, but I mean, so besides being lazy, doing hypnosis, and you guys hit the nail on the head. I mean, we're doing your show in mm-hmm. your studio. So it's going to be harder, I think, in this moment for you to cooperate in the way that I would need you to. But beyond that, it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
So when I ask for volunteers on stage, I think part of the interesting thing is the first part of the hypnotic part of the show isn't necessarily funny, but hopefully it's interesting. And then the other thing that I'm going for, I believe, is that if the audience can watch it happen, then they know the volunteers came out of the audience, that anyone from any table could be a part or star of the show. You might have a friend or loved one on stage, so you're really hooked into it. And so all the things that you have to go through, the hypnotic induction.
And then
sort of the deepening techniques, they won't play well on radio or podcasts. And it takes like 15, 20, 30 minutes.
But
the audience is at least hooked in because they get to watch the whole process. They see some people get hypnotized, some not. And then it starts getting progressively funnier. Anytime I were to do hypnosis on radio or TV, what I typically do is get volunteers that the radio station or TV station has to secure for me. We go into a conference room for like an hour to an hour and a half.
Wow.
Then I bring out very, very deeply hypnotized people. So the viewing audience or the listening audience has missed like the whole first half of the show.
Sure, got it.
It's kind of like when they have a cooking segment,
right?
And so they show like them putting a few ingredients in the bowl and then they cut away to the oven and they go, here's the souffle.
Exactly. So I
bring out the souffle.
I get that.
I'm sorry about this, but basically I wasn't listening to most of that. So I'm wondering which one of us are you going to hypnotize?
I have been told I'm a tad wordy.
No, I didn't mean it that way. I was just thinking about something else.
I do want to say this about you. I don't know if this is this voice that you're talking in, is this your natural voice or is this how your voice has developed over the years doing hypnotism and all of that? Because it's a very soothing, comforting voice, yes.
I think this is my voice. I think it's a more refined voice than it was when I was, say, 14. just throwing it out there.
You're newly married, what, 9, 10 months?
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I will work all over the country, but there's a few cities that I tend to go back to a lot. Phoenix is one, Dallas is one, D.C. is one, and there's a few others as well. But I was working in Dallas on April 12th. And a woman whom I did not know went to the club, the Addison Improv, on a ostensibly a blind date. And so they were talking like the day before. And this is according to her, the story she told me. He said, do you want to go to the Improv or you want to go to a movie? She goes, well, who's at the Improv? And he goes, I don't know. And she goes, all right, well, I don't know. And he goes, well, I don't know the guy, but he's a hypnotist. And she goes, a hypnotist? F that.
Whoa.
Let's go to the movie. And so a couple hours pass by, and then I think she texts him. It's like, well, I can see a movie anytime. Let's go to the Improv. And so they went there. And I guess they didn't hit it off. It was not a love connection. Right. And at the end of the show, he went to the restroom, and then she came over and hit on me.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we started texting and talking, and then I went back to Dallas. April 20th, which was Easter Sunday, after she enjoyed Easter with her kid and her parents and family. And then we had about a 24-hour date.
Wow.
Or so. And driving back from Dallas to Lafayette, which I live in Lafayette, Louisiana, I was talking to a few friends and they're like, well, how was it? And I was so angry. I was so incredible. I was like, she's got a lot of nerve and how dare she? And they're like, why it went bad? I go, no, it went really well. And at this point in my life, I want to be single. And yeah, she's messing it up. And like, why, if she could have come into my life like 8 years ago, it would have been great. But why now? I'm so angry. And as it turns out, she was telling her friends basically the same thing.
Wow.
And like 3 weeks later, we got tattoos.
Wait, 3 weeks later, what?
They got tattoos.
Is that her name on your arm?
Yeah.
After 3 weeks? Holy cow.
Wow, well, that's a real good example for your young son.
Well, your son is 10, right?
Yeah,
when he saw my first tattoo, he looks at me and he goes, Daddy? And I go, yeah, he goes, what's that? And I go, what's a tattoo? And he goes, oh, Daddy, tattoo people have muscles.
Broke the rule, huh?
That's great. We wish you the best. Thank you for coming by here. Flip Orley is going to be performing March 26th through the 29th at Stand Up Live in Phoenix, one of your favorite places.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And we thank the DC Improv for bringing him by here today. Flip Orley.
Thanks for having
me.
Thanks, man. We can't wait to see you again.
It's Tony and Gary. The Tony Perkins Show.
Ah, there he is. Look at him. He ran in just in time.
Dude, you have the best job in the world. What are you going to do? Go back to Good Guys?
Where's he going now? Where's he? Dude, we're almost done. Show's almost over. He'll be back. Don't worry. Perfect timing. Anyway, thank you to Flip Orley. We're done, Gary. This is a whole show.
Really?
Yeah, I think it was 6 hours long as a show. Yeah.
Flip, you know, with the tattoos and some issues and stuff. Do you think he would benefit from like 25 sessions with Dr. Brunswick?
That's funny. That's very funny. He probably could, yes.
I think we should suggest it.
I sense there's a lot going on there.
Me too. Yeah. Me too.
All right. We want to thank everybody once again. We're done. That's it. That's the show. Flip Orley, fantastic. Thank you, Flip, for joining us. Flip, again, will be at Stand Up Live in Phoenix, March 26th through the 29th. We do thank Sam and Grafia, your good friend, for channeling his alter ego once again, Dr. Lionel Brunswick.
He is now your good friend.
Yes, indeed. You can follow Sam on Twitter at Sam Ingrafia. That last name is Ingraffia. And his website is samingrafia.com. There you go.
Fantastic.
That's a show. Next week's show, Fox 5 movie reviewer Kevin McCarthy. We're going to talk all things movies. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
All right. We'll see you next time, folks.
I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. You better stop the things you do. I tell you, I ain't lying. I ain't lying. You know I can't stand it. You're running around. You know better, daddy. I can't stand it 'cause you put me down. Oh, I put a spell on you. Because you're mine. Oh,
Tony Perkins Show, a Moore Broadcasting presentation. This is Dude Walker speaking. Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.